investment works.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The final four segments of the Paracast. Robert Hastings, our guest. The book is UFOs and Nukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. My co-host is Chris O'Brien. On the Paracast, before we broke, we asked you this question. Chris did. He asked you a question about your investigative process, and maybe you can detail that here. How'd you get these people to talk?
I think earlier in the program I mentioned the fact that once I was aware that UFOs were being reported at the missile sites at Malmstrom in the spring of 67, in addition to my father, who worked at a place called the Sage Building, which was the military radar setup, who confirmed reports from civilian controllers at the air traffic control tower that I personally witnessed on one night. I describe in my book how that took place. In any case, once I knew that something seemed to be going on and serious people who had serious jobs were reporting this independent of one another, I was 17 and 16 going on 17. I couldn't really do much with it until I left college in 73, I think it was. I read Ray Fowler's report about UFO activity at Malmstrom, and that's what sparked. So my immediate field of opportunity was as I would meet people in the Air Force contacts I made, I would ask them, you know, the majority of people I asked about UFO activity at nuclear missile sites or weapon sites, you know, either looked at me like I was crazy or said, you know, I don't know anything about that. And those responses were truthful. Some weren't. But over just, you know, slogging one foot in front of the other year after year, you finally come up with, like I said, nearly 100 credible people, 130 rather credible people who have from the rank of retired colonel down to airman talked in very specific terms about their involvement in one incident or another. The internet made things easier in terms of contacting military alumni groups. I could contact security police squadron alumni groups. Those were the primary eyewitnesses. All the launch officers were underground. They were just getting these frantic reports from ground level from their security guys. But the eyewitnesses were the security police, and a number of them have been interviewed and appear in my book. But, you know, it still has this kind of catch-as-catch-can feel to it, because there's really no systematic way for me to sit down with every member in every squadron at a given base during a given time frame and grill them all. It's no way I can do that.
In essence, you just let one clue and one source lead you to other clues and other sources. Kind of
hopefully.
Yeah.
And, once I was, I have to say, once I was on Larry King in 2008, and that with Bob Sessis and I think it was two or three other retired Air Force officers, I got a number of, the number of solid leads from other Air Force veterans jumped quite significantly. And with my press conference in Washington this past September, which was streamed live by CNN, during which seven former Air Force personnel were talking about these things, I again have gotten a new influx of sources. I, of course, have to vet sources. Every now and then I get a liar or someone who's unbalanced making unfounded claims. But the majority of these people are quite solid. Their credentials stand up. Their service records verify their presence in these squadrons at these bases. Some of them even provide backup witnesses who, once I call, if I'm lucky, they will confirm what the first person told me. So it's just a lot of, you know, sleuthing. I don't know what else to call it. I can't tell you why I'm so obsessed with it, other than to say again that philosophically I think we're on the threshold of a new paradigm shift, and I think humanity within maybe not my lifetime, but certainly within the next few decades, is going to know that aliens have been visiting Earth, and among other activities, they've been monitoring and tampering with our nuclear weapons. I think that's self-evidently important. I think philosophically also the fact that we live in a supposed democracy, is this type of secret something the U.S. government deserves to have carte blanche or blank check? Blank check to keep us in the dark for 100 years about? I don't think so. So I'm doing what little I can do as a single person to try to crack the door open just a little bit.
Let me ask you a fast question that occurs to me as you talk about this. Of the people you interviewed, for the first book, for your original book, have you found any situations where maybe the evidence they presented is not as compelling as you thought it might be?
No, not off the top of my head. And I've been revising the book, as I said, as the new sources come on. I actually did that vetting process, weeding process, very conservatively. And if there were questions, there were a handful of people who, as I talked to them, their stories changed or whatever. Those people did not make the first cut. So the people that are in the book are in my view, quite credible. And, I am typing taped conversations with them, and the reader can make up his or her own mind as to the credibility of the sources. But I think they all stand up quite well.
Okay, you said you're revising the book. So the book we get today, if we buy the book today, it's the original book. Is it a revised edition or just the original?
It's the original edition. I have no idea when the second edition will come out, but I just feel that I've gotten enough solid leads since the first one came out in 2008 that ultimately I'll have to put out a second edition. It may not be until 2012 or even later. There's really no end game or timetable for me at this point.
It's not like a second book or a sequel, then?
Because I have sold the book only at my website with no advertising budget, you know, the number of people who've been exposed to it, other than the excerpts from it that have been posted online, is relatively small to the number of readers worldwide. So I think there's still a lot of, potential for audience for the first book. And, again, it's 600 pages. It's 35 years of research. And, it's not something that I'm going to easily and significantly revise in the short term. These things move slowly and in fits and starts. And, like I said, the next book will have significant revisions in it, but when that comes out is anyone's guess.
Fast question here, then. Looking at the book as it is now, what would you have wanted to change, if anything?
The first thing that comes to mind is the fact that when Larry King suddenly asked me to appear, I had not done a final proofread, and I had to rush to the publisher, so there are a number of typos in it. So something as silly as that, I am somewhat embarrassed about. I think one critic has said, reviewed the book and said, I am reading variations on the story for 600 pages, and I initially wondered whether that was a good thing, and then I realized that this subject is so important that as a reference guide alone, this book needs to be written to verify that this went on not once, not twice, but hundreds of times all over the U.S., all over the world, and the enormity of the database in itself is persuasive. So if you want a quick read, if you're into writing short blogs, entries, this is not the book for you.
No.
If on the other hand, you want to know what your government has been lying to you about regarding UFO activity at nuclear weapons sites, this is really, frankly, the only reference source on the planet at this point that covers the subject with any kind of comprehensive overview and detail.
Now, over the years, different governments have released what they claim to be a fair percentage of their UFO-related information. Of course, I guess the releases we've had here go back many years to the Project Blue Book special reports. Now, have you found anything in, say, the UK or other country releases that point out to additional evidence you have to explore for this kind of research?
Well, it's difficult enough to access eyewitnesses, primary sources in the U.S., let alone the former Soviet Union or other countries where I have no immediate contacts and or can't speak the language. So I'm limited in that regard. I will simply say that in addition to the reports from the former Soviet Union that have been highlighted by George Knapp and other persons, there are also what I consider to be credible but cursory information relating to activity in Pakistan and India, which have been nuclear saber rattling with each other for the last 10 years. There are incidents in Israel within the last year, I think, of an object that was sighted above their nuclear weapons facility, the Dimona.
And we'll have to get into more of that very shortly. Robert Hastings joins us. The book is UFOs and Dukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
You expect professional service from your doctor, your accountant, and even the girl who takes your morning coffee order. Why not from your domain registrar, too? Namecheap.com provides stellar service with no sneaky upselling. We offer more features and security options for your website than there are ways to order a latte. And new domains come with WhoisGuard to protect your personal info. At Namecheap.com, you can get your domain for as low as $2.99. Now is a great time to get to know Namecheap.com.
For 58 years, fate has provided true reports to the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms. I get it. You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
Don't let summer be a bummer. Stop sunburn pain, poison ivy, and mosquito bite itch, and the burn of athlete's foot with just one Safe-All natural first aid product, Dermatol. Many GCN listeners have already discovered how effective Dermatol is as a natural, non-acidic way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many skin problems. Now this special offer. Buy one bottle of Dermatol, get one bottle free. Call 1-800-217-6677 and mention GCN. Dermatol is the must-have first aid product for your preparedness kit. Made in America by Americans, Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Call 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. And ask for the GCN Buy One, Get One Free Special or use coupon code GCN at checkout at DermatolUSA.com. Spelled DermatolUSA.com. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. We're talking with Robert Hastings. The book is called UFOs and Nukes, and from what we're hearing here, it's a work in progress. And briefly, you said before we took the break about a case involving UFOs over a nuclear installation in Israel.
Earlier this year, there was a report of an object that was sighted above the Dimona nuclear plant in the Negev Desert in Israel. And the official story was that when jets fired upon it, it turned out to be a weather balloon. There's some definite questions about whether that's a credible explanation for what the witnesses were describing. I'm aware of a single document from declassified Australian files, again, within the last few months, indicating that there were sightings apparently at one of the test sites in Australia, I think in New South Wales, where the British were testing their atmospheric tests, nuclear weapons tests in the 50s and 60s. I'm aware of reports from French Polynesia in 1970s where the French, again, a member of the nuclear club, were seen their weapons, and a former weapons technician has come forward and talked about, I think, three off the top of my head, independent sightings he was aware of UFOs at either just prior to or just following French nuclear weapon tests. So it is universal or worldwide, let's say, and it's not confined to the superpowers, the U.S. and the former Soviet Union.
I have Andrew sitting here madly writing down some questions for me.
Should have Andrew just ask them himself.
Come on, Andrew. Okay, here he is. All right. This is a first, I think. First time I've had a guest in my house when we're taping the show. Andrew, take it away.
Good morning, gentlemen. Very, very fascinating topic. Hats off to you, Mr. Hastings, on a wonderful book. So I was just wondering if there's any physical trace evidence of these silos, sites of interest here. Specifically, has there been any recorded depletion of radioactivity, any oddly changed isotope ratios, or perhaps getting further out, funky half-life effects? Anything that would indicate there's been something there that's been messing around with the nuclear material itself?
My sources, whether they be launch officers, targeting officers, or missile security personnel, would simply not have the background or the need to know that information. They could not tell you, for example, with that kind of specificity, whether such changes were found. And again, it's a very compartmentalized situation. I do know, and for example, to follow up, the people who are providing field reports simply kick it up the chain of command. They never are given any feedback. They don't know what the conclusions were, et cetera. When Chuck Holt, and when I interviewed him, Charles Holt, deputy base commander at RAF Bentwaters in 1980, when he went public, talked to me in 2005, and even had gone public well before that and talked about this object hovering above the weapons storage area, sending out laser-like beams of light. Prior to my interview with him in 1994, I had interviewed a retired Air Force colonel who I can't identify, who was very high up in the NATO security weapons, nuclear weapons security apparatus. And he told me point blank that two tactical nuclear bombs, which were what were stored at the weapons storage area, it wasn't missile warheads, battlefield nukes, tactical nukes, two of these weapons were removed shortly after the UFO incident and shipped to Kirtland Air Force Base for analysis. But again, his protocols involve security, not the analysis, and so he was not directly involved in what conclusions were drawn upon inspection of his weapons at Kirtland. So again, it's very compartmentalized. The people on site just know that something hovered above the weapons. Suddenly the weapons didn't work. But the people doing the analyses, for example, in this case I just mentioned involving Bentwaters, they have not made themselves available to me, and so I can't answer that question.
Well, Bentwaters was unique in that you have a landed craft in this particular incident. How many other actual landings do we have? I don't seem to recall any. These are mostly objects that are hovering or flying by or somehow in the airspace nearby. Do we have any real landings of these craft inside secure facilities?
We do, but they're rare. I mentioned in my book an incident in 1974. A former missile launch officer at F.E. Warren in Wyoming described three incidents to me. The letter is reprinted in my book, in which he described being part of a landed object near one of the missile facilities, but that's not the exception to the rule. Usually these are hovering or maneuvering objects. Andrew mentioned earlier physical evidence. Radar data are physical evidence. They are empirical. They can be quantified, unlike witness reports, anecdotal reports. Radar data can verify the presence of a physical object generating a radar return. It can give you some information about the object's acceleration, etc. And there are instances where radar have picked up objects concurrent with sightings of them, reports of them by the security personnel. For example, at Malmstrom in November of 75. So that's physical evidence. That's independent verification that something went on in those cases.
Now, has the Air Force released this radar data through FOIA? How do we know this? Do we have any paper trail relating to these actual returns from radar units?
Well, the letter that I just referenced, which deals with UFO activity in November of 75 at Malmstrom Air Force Base, it's comprised of NORAD logs, North American Aerospace Defense Command logs, containing radar data about, verifying the presence of these objects that were hovering and then maneuvering around above these weapons. All of that was initially leaked by a Defense Intelligence Agency analyst in the late 70s. Copies of that document went to, among other people, researcher Brad Sparks and researcher Todd Seckel. But once they had this leaked document, the Air Force really couldn't deny its existence. When FOIA requests were filed to have that officially released, a really choppy, sort of censored version of the original document was released to both Brad Sparks and Todd Zeckel. It's been reprinted in my book. It's up at my website. But it's authenticated, and it comes straight from Air Force FOIA managers talking about radar confirmations of what at one point were objects hovering stationary and then moving around just very slowly above these missile sites, concurrent with sighting reports by security personnel at the missile sites. One of which, the entry, the NORAD log entry, says that they were describing a, quote, orange-white disc-shaped object, or disc object, rather. And so clearly you have your flying disc, flying saucer, being reported by these guards.
Well, I want to tell our listeners, if you have anything to say about the show, positive, negative, or somewhere in between, you write us, news@theparacast.com. Once again, that's news@theparacast.com. We're continuing a fascinating session, a visit with Robert Hastings, author of the book UFOs and Nukes, available from his website. So you order a copy and get a sense, an expanded, greatly expanded version of some of the stuff he's just outlining here. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits, magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm matches, first aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com. The main name in military supply.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
What's cooking at PrizeKitchen.com? Plenty! Low prices on your favorite kitchen brand appliances, Vitamix blenders, Omega juicers, reverse osmosis systems, and more. Plus, free shipping on it all. PrizeKitchen.com gives your family the tools for a healthy lifestyle by eating more fruits and veggies and drinking pure water. Go to PrizeKitchen.com. Great selection, low prices, free shipping. PrizeKitchen.com. We help make healthy lifestyles convenient.
You've heard a lot lately about zeolite, but what is it and why do you need it? Zeolite is a beautiful complex crystalline structure that encapsulates radiation and odors. ZeoKing Zeolite naturally eliminates radiation poisoning your body may pick up from x-rays, security scanners, or nuclear fallout. ZeoKing flushes environmental toxins absorbed from smoke, cell phones, and chemicals, so it detoxifies heavy metals including mercury, lead, and cadmium. ZeoKing Zeolite helps boost your immune system, allowing your body to balance itself and cut off food supply to cancer and parasites. Order your ZeoKing Zeolite now from ZeoKing.com for only $39.99 and receive a free month supply with every order. Call 888-402-6779. That's 888-402-6779. Or visit ZeoKing.com. That's ZeoKing.com for natural elimination of radiation poisoning.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
We continue with Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. Here on the Paracast, we have another question from Chris that we need to explore.
Well, this is something that, you know, I just thought of. And, you know, I was just at the recent MUFON symposium this past weekend speaking with Ron McGuire, who worked for a number of years on the DSP project in of course, we know we have, I think, 11 DSP satellites in geosynchronous orbit around the planet monitoring all sorts of potential activity. I think initially it was obviously tasked to detect ICBMs. That would be my assumption. Now, have you been able to find any sort of corroborative evidence from any sort of DSP scenario? We know that these satellites are very effective at monitoring the ground. They're looking straight down. And we have had inklings of DSP being tied into events that then later are thought to be UFO events. For instance, the 1995 NORAD phone call to the Rio Grande County Sheriff in Southern Colorado. We did get confirmation that DSP, was the instrument that actually saw a few acre-sized heat bloom. Do you have any data that supports DSP being involved in possibly monitoring these objects as they are having their way with our secure airspace over these facilities?
The short answer is no. I have not personally accessed any documents that would confirm that. I have not been approached by or stumbled upon persons who have that information based on their job descriptions. I am aware of Ron McGuire's research. I am aware of the incidents that you report in the San Luis Valley in Colorado involving the incident in 95. I suspect that, the agencies involved with These satellites have a number of photographs that you and I will never see, but proving that, of course, is another matter. One would think that there's enough activity over this many decades at these bases that some number of people are aware of what's going on, and resources have been devoted to trying to monitor these incidents, even though they really can't control them or predict them, probably. But I suspect there are images out there. NPIC, the National Photo Interpretation Center, was a component of CIA, is a component of CIA, I believe still by that name. In any case, Art Lundell, who was the founder of NPIC and was the person I think was in on the briefing of President Kennedy on the U-2 photographs of the Russian missiles in Cuba, quite a heavy hitter. Art Lundell was approached by Todd Zeckel in the 70s and asked to comment on NPIC's analysis of UFO photographs, which Mr. Zeckel had a number of sources, or a small number of sources, saying was going on. Art Lundell denied that was going on. He denied that there was any CIA involved with involvement with photo analysis of UFO photographs, but Mr. Zeckel had credible sources saying otherwise. So you can bet that the photos are being taken and being analyzed. Who really keeps them and so on is, you know, anyone's guess.
Okay, we still have a couple of questions from our very up-to-speed and informed and inquisitive listening audience out there, informed
posters. Or all of the above.
Yeah, or all of the above. There are, you have answered quite a number of questions that have been posed, and I do want to stress this, Robert. Your appearance here has really generated quite a number of questions and a lot of interest. One of the things that people are interested in is the possibility that we're dealing with some sort of very down-to-earth, very terrestrial technology. And Paul B2B2, who is a brand new forum signee, says
in
that...
In fact, he was our guest from last week.
Oh, is that... Okay. Okay, I didn't realize that, but that's good to know that our guests are now jumping in with both feet into the forum. This is excellent. He says he's really excited. He says, awesome that you'll be on. He will definitely be listening. But ask him about Nick Cook, who thinks that all kinds of advanced anti-gravity technology of earthly human origin has existed for decades, and the implication being, do you think there's any possibility that we're dealing with a multiplayer scenario? Sure, some of these objects appear anomalous, but is there a possibility that we're dealing with some sort of earthly technology? This kind of is a recap of an earlier question, but is there a possibility?
Nick Cook, who is an aviation editor, writer, whatever the exact title is, for Jane's Aviation Weekly, is out of his element in the way he discusses UFOs. I've seen a couple of television documentaries where if he's not actively engaging in disinformation, and I'm not suggesting that he is so naive about the topic of what has really gone on behind the scenes that he doesn't even know the right questions to ask, and therefore he's being led around by people who have probably alternative agendas. I would simply point out the fact that there's no credible evidence, despite what he advances in terms of scenario, that the Nazis had all this advanced technology, which was subsequently confiscated by the U.S. government. Any number of independent sources say that while the Nazis were attempting to develop radically designed craft, saucer-shaped craft, and so on, there is zero evidence from any source, living or dead, or any document that would corroborate that this turned into UFOs or flying saucers in the late 40s and early 50s. On the contrary, you have the very clear and well-documented situation. For example, in July of 1952, the very famous Washington overflights, where both civilian and radar were picking up objects, one of them flying 7,000 miles per hour. Our fastest jet was roughly 700 miles per hour. These objects were tracked by multiple radar stations on the ground around Washington, doing right-angle turns, 90-degree turns at high rates of speed, or complete reversals of flight without a turn, that is a 180-degree reversal of flight. In my book, I argue that if someone had that technology, whether it was us or the Russians or Nazis living in Antarctica or whatever.
Well, I was going to ask.
Why would we
watch out for those Nazis in Antarctica, my friend?
New Schwabenland.
You know, if we had, just to name one radar case of us doing that in 1952, why would we or the Russians or any other country on Earth spent the last 60 years developing ever more sophisticated fixed-wing aircraft? We still can't do all of those things that were tracked on radar in 1952. Why would we not, you know, aside from just wasting tons and tons of money developing fixed-wing aircraft when we already had UFOs, which makes no sense whatsoever. Getting back to finish the thought, however, you know, if some country on Earth had a craft in July 52 that could fly 7,000 miles per hour and do a right-angle turn with no damage, et cetera, not only would we or the Russians not have wasted the last half century developing fixed-wing aircraft, which are to this day far inferior to those craft, but if we or the Russians had such sophisticated aircraft in the course of the Cold War and all these confrontations where we were constantly rattling sabers at one another, wouldn't we or the Russians have unveiled that technology and said, look, if you don't mind your manners, America, or if you, the Soviet Union, don't behave, we're going to unleash our UFO force on you. If these objects can fly 7,000 miles per hour, you know, why would we not have launched a first strike, or why would the Soviets not have launched a first strike by putting bombs or missiles on one of these UFOs and just taking out its adversary rather than messing with bomber technology for many years and then later missiles that, again, take far longer to, you know, really get the job done. So there's just any number of reasons why the scenario that UFOs are advanced terrestrial craft just does not hold up under strict analysis, in my view.
I wanted to remind all of you that if you have a comment or a question about the Paracast, write us, news@theparacast.com. Once again, that's news@theparacast.com. We do read each and every message we get. We respond to most of them. Another way to get in touch with us are world-famous forums, sometimes very controversial forums, over at forum.paracast.com, forum.paracast.com. We have Robert Hastings. The book is called UFOs and Nukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget,
crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
We're doing the wind-up tour with Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien on the Paracast. Chris, any more questions left?
Well, yeah, I have one. Robert, you recently contacted me with some an interesting bit of news. You were inquiring about a certain, you're asking questions about the San Luis Valley, because evidently you're planning on moving to the San Luis Valley. You want to talk about that a little bit here before the show ends? Or?
Sure. I'm currently living in Taos, New Mexico, and I bought some property in the San Luis Valley, and I'm not going to be more specific than that, and I'm building a small house, a casita, and I hope to be in by November. People have said, you know, you're aware of all the paranormal activity up there. That's certainly the reason you moved up there. Actually, I moved up there because it's extraordinarily beautiful. Sangre de Cristo mountain range, snow-capped mountain range, everywhere when I step outside my new house. It's scenically beautiful. It has dark skies. I can see the stars at night. But I'm also hoping to see strange objects in the sky from time to time. But that really was not the primary reason I bought up there.
What happens if I get a sighting from the part of the valley that you're moving to and building a house? Would you be up for a late night phone call maybe to run out with some photographic equipment? Because it would be great to have somebody as motivated and up to speed as you as part of the Skywatch network there. I'd really appreciate it if I could rely on you to possibly help corroborate some sighting reports that I get from time to time. It'd be great to have you there, that's for sure.
I'm happy to do that. I'm a chronic insomniac. I'm up half the night most nights anyway, so you probably wouldn't even wake me up if you called.
Yeah, maybe we could. We're talking about possibly having an unpiloted drone scenario. We met an engineer and a very interesting guy who's an ex-Lawrence Livermore scientist who's designing some pretty sophisticated remotely piloted helicopter technology that has quite a payload capacity up to 40 pounds, this one, the first initial drone. And, we've been kind of thinking about a really good place to park that thing. So maybe we could talk later on down the road. Of course, Andrew here wants to really get going on kind of maximizing our potential there. And it would be great to have you on board as an unofficial team member.
I'm happy to accommodate you. We'll discuss with the particulars. I have seen, I think I'm up to 8 unidentified objects over about a 35-year period, objects that quite clearly were not aircraft, but the duration of the sighting and the distances involved really precluded any sort of, unequivocal assessment of what I was looking at. But
these are your sightings, and this is a key point we haven't gone into before.
Right.
Sure. When did you see your first UFO?
In April of 66, I saw an object that could be called a green fireball, and in my book I have a whole chapter based on Dan Wilson's research into the green fireball phenomenon. It turns out these objects were being reported over Los Alamos, Sandia Labs, over the Killeen weapons storage area in Texas back in the 40s and 50s. Some of the observers observed maneuvers. Quite clearly, they were not natural phenomena. They were clustered around northern New Mexico and west Texas, where these nuclear facilities were. They did not distribute themselves. Sightings were not uniformly distributed or randomly around the world. So quite clearly, they were objects of some kind under intelligent control. Captain Edward Ruppel talks about a discussion at Los Alamos of the green fireballs with some nuclear scientists who concluded they were probably alien craft of some kind. So I saw one of those in 66. If it was a meteor, it sure didn't look like any other meteor that I've seen before or since.
I want to ask you one thing here, maybe just address one point. You're saying Ruppel concluded they were alien? Because he never concluded that in his books. He always said maybe they are, and then he recanted on that in the revised version.
What I said or meant to say was that in his book, he describes, in fact, I've reprinted a good page or two of directly from his book, where he's at Los Alamos discussing the subject of the green fireballs with nuclear scientists working at Los Alamos, and a number of them speculated that these were alien craft, monitoring devices of some kind. And he, Ruppelt makes the comment, you know, the scientific community as a whole, had they known these conversations were going on and that these top flight nuclear scientists were talking about alien spacecraft visiting Los Alamos, you know, they would have been, you know, horrified. But he reported in 1956 in his book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, that he had conversations with the scientists, some of whom were green fireball sighting witnesses, who said that were offering the idea, a number of them apparently, that these were probably probes of some kind launched by an alien spacecraft in orbit around Earth. And Ruppelt goes into great detail about the discussion that took place.
So what do you think here? Do you think maybe the UFOs have a larger base on Earth or maybe on the backside of the moon, as is suggested by some?
Who knows? I think, you know, anecdotally over decades now, there do seem to be suggestions of objects in remote areas seemingly coming out of mountains or going into mountains, whether that's an illusion or suggestions of, you know, suggest some sort of underground facility, who knows. There are many, many reports of objects popping out of the water or diving into the water. Do they have bases under the oceans? Who knows? Probably. You know, while we're talking about this, all of these reports over the last 20 years of the Dulce base in northern New Mexico are disinformation. And if one's curious to look at the history of those stories and where they came from, Richard Doty, a former OSI agent who has admitted to forging documents and misleading Linda Mouton Howe and many others, scientists named Paul Benowitz, with all sorts of bogus information and forged documents in which he presented the underground alien base at Dulce as a topic of discussion. You know, that base, the stories about that base, in my view, are thoroughly discredited. And I personally investigated and was involved in exposing Richard Doty 20-something years ago.
I'll tell you what, we've actually asked Richard Doty to come on the show and explain himself, and he keeps chickening out. He's afraid of being asked the tough questions, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I can't remember where this article is. I wrote an article 2 years. Well, I wrote one in 1989 in which I first exposed Richard Doty as a disinformation operative at Kirtland Air Force Base OSI, who was feeding bogus information to Linda Howe, Bill Moore, and other individuals. This Paul Benowitz. Basically, after denying that was true. Within months, Bill Moore held an infamous presentation at the MUFON convention in Las Vegas. This would have been the summer of 89, in which he admitted about 90% of the things that I had written about, that in fact there was disinformation schemes going on. Linda Howe was suckered, et cetera. And many years later, Doty finally, in dribs and drabs, has confirmed that he had forged documents to try to camouflage the Roswell story and any number of other subjects. All of that is common knowledge. I wrote a follow-up article, I think in 2009, called Operation Bird Droppings. One can Google that, Operation Bird Droppings, and read the, you know, and these sources of this supposedly high-powered inside UFO information were called the Aviary. There was Falcon and, you know, all Condor and all these other people.
But
yeah.
No one named Buzzard.
Well, Doty was either Buzzard or Dodo. I'm not sure which. I forget.
Well, that, you know, you get six different stories from six different people who are involved in all of that. The information I was getting early on was that he was Falcon. And when I exposed him basically as such and what he was up to, the shenanigans he was up to, then there was a lot of backtracking. Oh, he wasn't really Falcon. He was covering for another guy who was Falcon. And just,
I don't want to get into it. We're just about out of time. I'll tell you what. Where do we find more of your information?
My website is ufohastings.com. It's got several articles there. It's got my background. It's got an overview of the UFO nukes connection. It's got a full-length video of the press conference that held in September 2010 in Washington, CNN streamed live. You can see the full-length video at my website. And then, of course, if anyone's interested in 600 pages of this history, chapter and verse, then you can purchase my book there as well.
Robert Hastings, thank you for joining us this week on the Paracast.
Thank you for having me on. I certainly appreciate this opportunity to present this information. It's quite clearly important. Forget what I say about it. Just read the testimony of my sources and draw your own conclusions about the reality of the situation.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand.